It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Yes, it is. And this week, the Green Party co-leader and I chat about all things environmental for 95BFM's election coverage. This week's theme is the environment. In the leaders' debate last week, one of the things Jacinda Ardern and Judith Collins spoke about was, quote, dirty dairy and the waste from dairy farming polluting New Zealand's waterways. A couple of weeks ago, the Greens released their Farming for Future plan, which sets out how to turn our agriculture industry, which is a huge contributor to our CO2 emissions and the degradation of our environment here in New Zealand, into a solution for climate change. So I began by asking James Shaw, how does the Greens' Farming for Future plan address the dairy industry and our waterways directly?
Well, there's a few things. First of all, the most important part of the package is this $300 million fund to assist farmers who want to make the transition from where we are today to where we need to be in the future. You know, we've done a lot of work on freshwater and on greenhouse gas emissions with farmers over the course of the last 3 years. And the one thing that they've all said to us is, yep, you know, we can see there's a problem. Yes, we want to make that transition, but we just need a bit of support because many of them are sort of stuck in a hamster wheel and quite highly indebted and feel that they just need to make that hamster wheel go faster in order to try and be able to pay off their debt and get some clear air. So we're saying, okay, that's cool. We can, you know, make sure that we provide that support. At the same time, there are some farmers who are sort of dragging the chain a bit on those freshwater reforms and on climate change. And so we do need sound regulation, and that's to make sure that essentially all farmers are, have the brand of, you know, clean, green New Zealand produce underpinned with strong environmental standards, and that overseas buyers who take our product can trust the quality of what it is that they get. And so we have said that, you know, we'll look at things like restricting the amount of nitrogen that farmers can put on their land, and have a kind of a sinking lid for that over time, and also that we would get rid of palm kernel supplementary feed, which actually a number of farmers are doing anyway because it has pretty horrendous consequences in the countries that it comes from.
Besides dairy, what are other contributing factors to the degradation of our waterways?
Well, actually, I mean, there are far fewer urban streams, but our urban streams are in worse state than our rural streams. And so the fact is that over the course of the last 30 or 40 years, we have not maintained our pipes and replaced the infrastructure under our feet. And actually, that has led to a severely declining water quality in our towns and our cities, and we absolutely have to get on top of that as well.
Is there a plan to address the urban waterways? Because I think currently 94% of rivers in urban areas are unswimmable. What's the goal there?
Well, so that's work that Nanaia Mahuta has been working on over the course of the last 3 years, and that there are two components to it. One is that we're developing a nationwide regulator for water quality, and she got that up and running in the last term. And then the second thing is that we actually have to make sure that we're in a position to be able to do that essential and very expensive work of replacing those pipes. And so she's been in negotiations with the local government sector over the course of the last 3 years about basically amalgamating a number of the water suppliers so that we've got about five water suppliers around the country that the different councils own, but that they've got the size and the scale to be able to afford to do that major replacement and maintenance work.
You described National's agriculture policy as dangerous. What about that their policy is dangerous?
Well, there's a number of things. First of all, I also described it as the great leap backwards, because what they're suggesting is that actually what we need to do is to get rid of our environmental bottom lines and our environmental standards. The reason it's dangerous is because people overseas actually do notice where their food comes from, and what we're trying to do with the agricultural sector, and this has been led by the sector itself, is move from a kind of commodity volume play to more of a high-end value play. But that relies on really strong environmental standards. And so if National were to get rid of our environmental standards around fresh water, what that would mean is that you would continue to see polluted waterways, continuing environmental degradation, and the degradation of our brand overseas. And with that, the price that farmers can expect for their product.
Farm released a press release that said the Greens agriculture policy, quote, denies basic science, and that the belief that livestock produce half of New Zealand's emission is misplaced. And they said that the Ministry of Environment states clearly that emissions of ruminant methane do not need to decrease at all to stop global warming, and that the green policy, which wants to price livestock emissions, is not a good one. What do you say to this?
Well, it's incorrect. I mean, the agricultural emissions do account for about 48%. Ruminant livestock accounts for about 30% of our emissions. What they're pointing to is that it's a different gas, right? It's methane rather than carbon dioxide, and it behaves differently in the atmosphere. And it does need to reduce. It just doesn't need to reduce at the same pace that carbon dioxide and nitrous oxide, which are the two very long-lived greenhouse gases, it doesn't need to reduce at the same rate that those do. But methane, when it's in the atmosphere, causes significantly more damage than carbon dioxide or nitrous oxide. And so it is important that it does reduce, but because it degrades reasonably quickly, it can reduce at a lower rate. That, I think, is what they're pointing to. And we've accounted for that in the Zero Carbon Act, and the Climate Change Commission, when they report back on our emissions budgets for next year, will be taking that science into account.
Let's move on now to another thing that was discussed, or rather not discussed, in the leaders' debate. There have been criticisms on how neither leader, Ardern nor Collins, addressed any Māori issues. As a party, the Greens, which has quite a substantial list of kaupapa Māori policies, what was your take on this, and what would you expect from the second debate this Wednesday when addressing Māori issues?
Well, I mean, I think this is a problem with the format of having the co-leader, the two leaders' debates, where there's only two people in it. Because then what happens is you kind of get this, but those kinds of voices and those kinds of issues that are incredibly important don't get the kind of airing that they need to get. And I think if you were to move to proper multi-party leaders' debates that had the two leaders of Labor and National in it, then you would start to see some of those voices start to come through in those debates, and some of those issues get highlighted. Because I think it's in the interests of Labor and National to say as little as possible that might be seen as too controversial. But actually, that's why you have other parties in Parliament, is to be able to provide some of those voices.
If we are a multi-party system, why is it just these two leaders that are debating quite publicly?
I think, frankly, it's a hangover from the bad old days of first past the post. And the fact is that, you know, the media still plays up this idea that only Labor or National will run the country. And that's just a sort of a cultural hangover from 20 years ago. And it is something that I think that we need to pay some attention to and get rid of. It's not how it works in other multi-party democracies.
Back to environmental news. A couple of weeks ago, there was a rather disheartening report that showed the world had failed to meet a single target to stop the destruction of nature. This was, of course, referring to the 20 HE biodiversity targets that were agreed on by the international community in 2010. Where did New Zealand go wrong in achieving its targets, and what were its targets?
Well, I think if, you know, that was 2010, that agreement was put in place, and since then we had a National-led government that frankly just wasn't that interested in protecting nature. And so that is something that Eugenie Sage, who is the Associate Minister for the Environment, has been working on as a biodiversity strategy for the whole country. I got to tell you, it just takes a long time to turn that around.
You hear news like this and it makes you think that it's all well and good to have these plans, and it's hard enough to get people to agree to these plans in the first place. And then once they're agreed on, not a single target is met. I mean, it makes people think that it's all words and no action, and it's quite hard to remain hopeful. Why is the climate crisis treated so frequently like a partisan issue? We were lucky enough in New Zealand that the pandemic has more or less been seen as bipartisan, and we've had a strong response, especially compared to other states. So why not climate change, which is equally threatening to our society and humanity?
Well, look, I mean, I completely agree with you that signing up to an international agreement is quite a lot different from actually doing the work domestically to live up to the standards in those agreements. And New Zealand has had, a fairly patchy record of that of ourselves. I have to say, I think one of the reasons I fought so hard to try and ensure that National came on board with the Zero Carbon Act was to try and change that so that we do have some long-term policy certainty that next time there's a change of government, they're not going to come in and just trash the whole thing like they did when they came in 2008. And so I think it is really important to try and forge a bipartisan consensus around those really big environmental challenges of our time, because you're right, otherwise we won't be able to solve them.
In the next government term, what would be your key plan in order to get politicians to work together and do rather than say, so there aren't repeats of situations like the HE situation, because we can't really afford any more?
No, we cannot. We cannot afford any more delay. I mean, the main thing that I did in the last term was simply to reach out to the opposition, to brief them in advance, to give them as much information as possible. And what I found was that when I did that, actually, they were much more open-minded about the possibility of working together on some things. And so then they would engage constructively, and rather than just come at it in a sort of pure oppositional sense, they would say, OK, well, look, we've got the following concerns. Can you meet those concerns? And in most places, I am able to meet those concerns. Not everywhere, but there is, you know, when you can kind of sit down and work through the evidence, actually you do find that there is common ground there and that people do want to make progress. So for me, that's why the Green kaupapa of wanting to transform the way we do politics is so important, because the old kind of left-right, you know, government opposition Punch and Judy show is completely dysfunctional, and it does not serve us well in terms of those big challenges of our time.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.